Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
When I was Hello and welcome to Real Recovery, and thanks to the Beatles for writing us a theme song just for Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, George P. Fraser. George, I have to say not only hello to you, but what a great show we've got planned tonight.
I'm looking forward to it, Bill. You tipped me off a little bit, and it sounds great.
I love the fact you said tipped me off, because I think the tip-off is the first thing that happens in a basketball game.
The great ones have it, Bill, and that was an accident. I don't. Yeah. So
yeah, well, we do have a college basketball player who had quite a career, and quite an incident happened in his career that was a pretty well-publicized tragedy, and that turned into kind of a downward spiral for him. But God got him back on track. So it's going to be a great story.
It sounds good. And Bill, as you know, every week we talk about a step on our program. And tonight I wanted to talk about step three, where we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. When we make that decision, Bill, and you've worked with a lot of guys, it's not a verbal, I'm going to turn everything over to God. It's a commitment. It's an action. It's an acceptance that we're not in the decision-making business anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to get some people in our life that are mentors, people that have walked the walk, that are in recovery, that are Christian guys for us, that we're accountable to. Accountability, iron sharpens iron, so one man another. And we always go into Ephesians where we have to put off the old. We got to stop. But we have to put on the new. Action required, okay? We need to get into action. We need to get into the Word. We need to pray. And we need to put forth an effort to become Christ-like. I remember one of the first conversations we ever had was when you asked me why I didn't talk more about holiness. Now that you know me, you know why. but it was really a nice, gentle way of me to go, hey, and I told you, I don't know. It was working down at the Salvation Army. And you added some things to my game, my walk with the Lord. And it was something that I needed to focus more on. My guys sure did. We all surely do. But we want to be receptive to God and find out in his word so he can do our thinking for us. I've been transformed by the renewing of my mind. And I keep going back to, Bill, one of the great life verses for me is, apart from me, you can do nothing. Mm-hmm. And I forget that because I always say, well, I got this. I don't need to do that anymore. And I think what I do, and a lot of the guys I work with and my friends do, we forget that he's in charge and my job is to do what he wants me to do. It's not his, my will for him. It's his will for me. And that's easy to forget. Fair?
Mm-hmm. Very fair.
Good. I thought we'd have some more time off of that question, but really we're not going to. But that's what I've been focused on lately. And one of the great things about working with guys, and God truly blessed us that we're able to do that, to help them find Christ and to get sober, mm-hmm. is I get to revisit all the things that I've worked on and still need to work on. And a lot of us put a rosier picture on what's really going on. And we need to ask God to give us the gift of honesty. Jesus said, I am the truth, that I can really look at what's going on and give us the freedom to go, I'm struggling with that. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, a lot of areas come back where I will say, well, I'm doing a lot better than I am. George, not how are you doing? What are you doing? Mm. Because if I'm saved and I know it, my life will surely show it. I know I stole that from somebody,
yeah.
But it's very true.
Sounds like something in a Mary Poppins movie.
Well, I think you want to clap your hands when you say it.
I think a step three, and it seems like, you know, to using your house as a metaphor, if I go to your house and it appears that it's...
Please don't.
No, I won't, but I'm using it as an illustration.
Thank you.
But all the doors and appear locked, all the windows appear locked. So step three is like, the opening of a door to which everything appears locked and closed. And you need a decision to open the door. Because this is, I think, well, how you come up against, how do I move into this decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him?
That's a great analogy. I think you have to knock. You have to seek, and then you will find.
Mm.
I stole that, too.
Yeah,
but I like the door analogy. Doesn't Jesus use that in Scripture?
Yeah, He does.
That He's the gate?
Yep. So we're going to find out what Matt's got to say about his story. The book is called Leftovers, and I think this is referring to the leftover players after the tragedy. And the tragedy was well publicized. It involved a murder, so it's going to be quite a story. And then Matt's life took a direction which didn't go well, and God got him back on track. That's going to be our story tonight. Matt Samen is going to be our guest after the break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Ryan on the board, and you can bet we'll be right back. What you're saying, you can get it wrong and still think that it's all right. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We've got a very interesting show tonight, George. Our guest, Matt Samen, has always wanted to play basketball his whole life. He ended up getting a full athletic scholarship to play at Baylor about 20 years ago. And, you know, you were first place in the ninth grade or 9-year-old punt, pass, and kick competition. So you guys have a lot in common.
Yeah, we got a platform.
Yeah, a platform on which to speak.
Gosh, that Baylor team a couple years ago was lights out. I'm looking forward to this.
It's going to be great. Matt also wrote a book called The Leftovers, Baylor Betrayal and Beyond. We're going to hear about that story. He's got a very strong work ethic, which I love. I want to hear more about that because he wanted to go pro after graduation. But his world got completely turned upside down, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Matt, welcome.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me on.
Yeah, for sure. So you have a hard work ethic, which I appreciate. Did athletics come easy to you, or did you have to really – really work hard?
Well, I definitely had to work hard. I played every sport growing up, and I think that's a good thing for younger athletes to do in elementary school, middle school, is to play all the sports and enjoy it and have fun. And then maybe one of them starts to stand out a little bit. And that's what basketball was for me. It was the sport that I never really put down. And I had an ability to learn a new skill, spend a lot of time, not get bored until I was able to perfect it and then move on. And I think that's the difference between a lot of players when they're younger, is they get bored doing the same things over and over. But that's really what it takes to improve and get better.
Yeah, so I would love for you to take us back 20 years ago or so. There was a very well-publicized tragedy which happened on the Baylor basketball team, and seems like you were you tried to be the glue that held the team together. I'd love for you to share what went on.
I was a part of Coach Bliss's, Dave Bliss, his first recruiting class at Baylor. And when I met with him, this was in the year 2000. When I met with him, he laid out his plan for what Baylor basketball could be. And he told me as a 18-year-old kid that I would be a big part of it, a pillar of the program. And, you know, what player doesn't want to hear that? And so I was so excited for the direction Baylor was going. My first 3 years, we had some success, and we were a team that was young but had some talent and were kind of becoming. We were becoming really good. And going into my senior year in 2003, 2004, we were picked to be top four in the Big 12, which means you can probably be in the top 25 and probably make March Madness, which was the goal for, I think, every college player. And we had some younger players than me. I was going to be a senior, and we had several kind of leaders in at that grade and guys that were good role players. And we had some younger stars that were going to be NBA players with a lot of talent. So it was just a perfect mix. And I was playing for a coaching staff that I had almost played 100 games for. So you could say as a 21-year-old that I was living the dream that I had since I was 9 years old. And that's when that summer came about. And I got a call from a professor on a Friday afternoon in June. He said, Matt, you need to turn on the TV. Something's going on with your team. And I, sure enough, I just saw this story unfold in front of me where it turns out one of my teammates had shot and killed one of my other teammates. And the coaching staff that I played almost 100 games for, they were doing a lot of things wrong right in front of me. And I didn't know. And so I felt a little bit naive, a little bit betrayed there. And over the span of 2 months, I lost 10 teammates, guys that decided not to come back, two to the tragedy, the scandal, and then my entire coaching staff. So going into my senior year, it was a completely different picture than what I thought it was going to be.
Wow, that's no one would have ever expected that. I mean,
no, you don't expect that phone call.
Never
on a Friday afternoon.
Never. So you've got a murdered teammate, and I don't even know how you start to spin this one.
Yeah, the year started off really rough. You know, first we didn't even know if we were going to have a team, if Baylor or the NCAA was going to shut down the program. Like, that was in the talks. And I was driving from – I'm from Dallas-Fort Worth, and I was down in Waco driving back home. And I got a call from a friend saying, hey, they got you a new coach. And I thought, who in the world would take this job? We have 6 scholarship players, and none of us are stars, to play against the best of the best in college basketball, Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, a Hall of Fame coaches, future NBA players. And we have 6 players. And I asked, who is it? And he said, Scott Drew. And I just quickly responded, oh, never heard of him. Because I know he did great things. His dad did great things at Valpo. But I just, being down in the Big 12, just I'd never heard of him before. And that year was difficult. Like, we were losing to teams that we used to beat really bad. And on top of all of this, when basketball got bad in my life, basketball was for the first time the problem. I realized that the faith that I had grown up having, you know, I grew up in a Christian home, and I claimed to be a believer, but I had a lot of head knowledge, not sure if there was a lot of heart there. And I think if you were to open up my chest, basketball was Lord of my life. And when that fell apart, I was lost, and I went searching for any type of peace and enjoyment that I could find. And man, it's just hard to believe that you could turn your back on 21 years of really good habits, morally good living, in about the span of 2 months.
Wow. George, I know you've got a thought about what's going on to this point.
Well, I can imagine you've got all your hopes just totally shattered. And what you wanted to have happen probably isn't going to happen. What was that like for you?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, you got to go back even a little bit farther than that, because it's not like this feeling of where does my identity lie, or security? What's my foundation really about? It started way back when my family and I mean, I was 9 when I fell in love with basketball, and my family and I really invested. We were actually from Pennsylvania. I met a coach right before my freshman year in high school down in Texas at a camp. I told him what my goals were, one being to be a Division I college basketball player. He said, Matt, that can happen for you down here. I flew back up to Pennsylvania as a 14-year-old and told my mom on the way home from the airport, we need to move to Texas so I can be a college basketball player. And 2 weeks later, our whole family moved down here. So it was incredible that they would believe in me that much. But they also saw that I was serious about it. Basketball wasn't just a hobby. But my whole family was all in on this dream. And I think this happens to a lot of people, that we believe that if we do the right thing, say the right thing, and go to church and try to live morally good, that God will just make sure everything happens the way that we want, like a genie. He'll make sure that these dreams happen. And the problem was it was working out that way. I mean, every goal that I had, I achieved it in the order and the way that I wanted. And so this false theology just kept rolling until all of a sudden, now basketball, it's just completely dismantled. And I'm thinking, okay, God, like, how did you allow this to happen? And if you're going to allow this to happen, then I'm going to take control. I'm going to take control of my peace, my happiness, my joy. And you know, there's a 9-year journey that took me on, but there's a lot more that happened even my senior year with basketball that the leftovers, the book is really about.
Oh, Matt, I'd love to hear more. I mean, I'm also curious too, as to when you started to go from this way of living to saying, I'm going to start looking for my own pleasure and my own way of going about it. And there was the partying and the drinking that started.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, I had, you know, it's funny when you look back, it's never just one moment. That moment when I got that phone call and the 2 months that happened after that, it just pushed me too far. But even if I look back before that, there was some slippage, you know, the slippage in the way I was living. The sin was creeping in some areas. And so when basketball was something that I no longer desired or found my validation in, then that competitive nature that makes sometimes athletes good at what they do at sports, if you turn that to like the party scene, then that's dangerous because you can become really competitive in that arena. And that's what happened is I just started to where I would walk into a party. If I ever randomly went to one, my first few years at Baylor, I mean, I was known for being a believer, not drinking, not being associated with that. So people would hide their drinks from me because they didn't want me to see them in that way. That's what I was known for. In the span of 2 months now, I'm hosting, I'm leading people in that direction, which is, I mean, regret is one of the worst pains, right? Discipline's not nearly as bad as the pain of regret. And I definitely regret the people that I led in a negative way back at that time. But basketball did continue, and Coach Drew came in with his brand new coaching staff, and things were hard, and we were losing to a lot of teams. We didn't have a lot of talent. We didn't have a lot of players. It was a different style. And on top of it, I was a miserable, angry person with these bad habits off the floor. So that's all a recipe for disaster. And there was a moment before conference play started that I really, really wanted to quit. We had been booed at home. We had lost by 25. And an assistant coach gave me really good advice. He said, Matt, just show up tomorrow. Like, just show up tomorrow. And I think that's really good advice for when we are struggling and we think that, man, there's just I can't do this anymore. Well, don't look too far ahead at 3 or 4 months or a year down the road. Just show up tomorrow. And so I started to do that. And basketball, there's a miracle part in the story where miracle as far as basketball is concerned, not what we would consult with like life-changing things. But our team came together. We started to believe in this coaching staff with Coach Drew. We started to believe in each other. And we had this idea, this mantra of we're just going to play as hard as we possibly can and try to do something every night that nobody thinks we can do, which is be competitive because we weren't supposed to win a game. And in that mentality, we actually beat some Big 12 teams. We were up 4 at Texas Tech, which Bobby Knight was coaching at the time there. You know, just incredible moments. And so finishing up that year, we ended up building a foundation that I think helped the program move faster, get better quicker than it really should have.
So, Matt, when I hear you go from a really straight and arrow reputation on campus to hosting the parties, I'm wondering what some of your accountability group, some of your friends, some of your believers, what were they saying to you? It's like, hey, Matt, what up?
You know, I've never been asked that question before, but it's so good. I had some really strong friend groups, I would say freshman through junior year. and strong believers. It was so much fun. Like, I didn't really hang out with athletes very much, interestingly enough, before, and it kept me out of not hanging out with my teammates, kept me out of the police investigations more. So that was good.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one occasion that I was at a party, and two friends from, I would kind of say, my previous life came up and saw me and saw what I was doing in the moment, contacted me a few days later, and in tears confronted me on what I was doing. And unfortunately, I was so hardened and so angry and bitter. And you know, anytime that I would go to those habits or go to those places, it was to get a little bit of relief, you know, 3 to 4 hours of what I would think back then, what I thought was just, I just want to laugh. I want to have some fun. I want to not think about the situation I'm in. The scary thing is that it worked, you know, for those 3 or 4 hours it worked, but then unfortunately, those problems, you know, they don't go anywhere. And I learned that too from after my senior year. I went and played in Iceland for 1 year. It was the only place in the world that would ask me to come play basketball for them, because I'm not that big. I'm not that athletic, but I played really hard. And my first practice over there, the guys asked me where I played, and I told them Baylor. I thought, you know, I'm probably a pretty big deal to these guys over here in Iceland. And a guy looked at me with a puzzled look, and in broken English, he asked, don't they kill people there? This story that I was a part of, it followed me all the way across the ocean. And so, you know, when I talk to people about running from their problems, you can. And I tried. And The bad thing too is, even though I was playing pretty well in Iceland, those bad habits came with me, and I was actually asked to leave Iceland on bad terms because of the way I was living off the court. And that really, those, that way of living followed me for about 9 years, through a lot of broken relationships, a lot of jobs. I just couldn't stick a job for a long time. And I had actually started high school coaching at that point, but I was pretty angry. And when you're an angry person, that bleeds over into how you coach and what you're doing. And so there's a lot of players from when I started out that I've apologized to over the years. And it really wasn't until my 30th birthday where a massive change happened.
Yeah, I want to hear about that after the break. Matt Salmon is our guest. He's written a book called The Leftovers, Baylor, Betrayal, and Beyond. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Ryan on the board. He'll probably join in a little bit later as well. He does the basketball play-by-play right here at the University of Northwestern, and he can't wait to jump in. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, thanks for joining us tonight. I have a great story from Matt Salmon telling about his story in a book called The Leftovers, Baylor, Betrayal, and Beyond. He played basketball at Baylor. And George, you know that we don't let Ryan talk very often, right? Because, you know.
Reason for that, Bill.
Yeah, I know there's a reason, but I figured because he calls play-by-play basketball here at Northwestern, and he really wants in on tonight's show, that we would let him ask the next question. We're not paying him anymore, but we're going to let him ask the next question. Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, so Matt, you were talking last segment how you went out to Iceland because they would allow you to play there. And I'm just wondering, you know, when you get to that place and you realize basketball's maybe over around the corner, you get to that place and basketball's done with, and it's what you've been working for seemingly your whole life. How do you wrestle with that where, you know, that's been all you've known for so many years? How do you get past that And can you take us back to that time in your life when you found out, hey, this phase of my life is over?
Yeah, after getting let go at Iceland, coming back home, I had no money. And I had a degree from Baylor, which is great, in speech communications. So I didn't know at the time how I could use that. I did not have a desire to coach at that point. And so when I think the danger that anybody can fall into is when your whole identity is wrapped up in a sport, in academics, in a job, or in a person. If that changes, like, who are you? What's your foundation, or who is your foundation in? What are you going to do? And in about 3 year span back in Dallas, Fort Worth, I went through almost 9 jobs, and I can't even name off some of the jobs at this point because I was there so short for such a short time. But there was no passion involved in any of it, and so how do you handle that? I handled it poorly. I did not handle it very well. And I was just kind of like I had done. It was an extension of my senior year. I was just trying to drown out how miserable I was, how helpless I was. And the thing is I had heard the truth growing up. And so I had head knowledge, but I was just continuously running from God and never once running to him, asking for forgiveness for the life I had been living. And never once even, or if I thought about giving up control, I just had too much pride in doing that.
Did you feel like you kind of had a bargain with God that you're going to, you know, be pretty obedient, but you're going to get this, you're going to be a basketball guy. And then that's kind of ripped away. And all of a sudden you're going, wow, that wasn't part of the agreement. Was that kind of the deal?
Oh, you're right on the money. It was as if I had asked God to sign a contract, you know, with me as a 9-year-old of I'm going to do everything on the outside from the world's viewpoint. I'm going to live pretty well. And I mean, I didn't cuss. I never drank. I didn't have inappropriate relationships with girls, you know, and I mean, all the way through with this kind of notion of, I'm going to be blessed. And sometimes, I mean, you work hard and you do things right and God does bless people. There's no doubt. But at what point did I stop? It'd be interesting to find out at what point did it stop being because God's blessing me and more because how good I'm doing, this is happening. He's rewarding me for how good I'm doing. And I think that's the lie, right? Is why do bad things happen to good people? That's the lie. There's no good people. We're all sinners, but you can forget that. And I think as a young person, I did.
You know, that's not that unusual. We work with a lot of guys, Bill and I do. You just had the ability to have that happen at a D1 school later. A lot of our guys get it around 15. That they're not going to play Major League Baseball because there's guys on high school. They're going to be lucky if they can make the team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not unusual, Billy, but he just had the ability to go a lot farther with it. And it is crushing. That's your whole identity. Who are you now?
Yeah, and I really went on a long, long journey figuring that out. Thankfully, in one of the jobs that I was getting into, it did revolve around basketball again, and it was at a sports complex, and the guy that owned it wanted me to coach his 8th grade son and build a team around him. And I did it, and it was my first time with a team building a practice plan, and I was just blown away by how much I enjoyed it, and I loved that part. I just always thought I wanted to be a player, and that's it. And I found so much enjoyment in helping these young guys. But unfortunately, I was probably leading them down a similar path that I had been on, which is hard work, no excuses, and you make your dreams happen no matter what. And if basketball is not the number one thing in your life, then it probably won't happen for you. and that's just a dangerous way to think. And then thankfully, just to kind of fast forward, I mean, I'm 30 years old. This was 10 years ago, 30 years old, alone in my apartment. And on my birthday, just thinking about, is this really what life is supposed to be like? I mean, I grew up with just such high hopes, and I never thought I'd be in this position. And I went to a church randomly a few days after. I sat in the back and filled out a visitor card. And on it I wrote, I'm angry and I have questions. And I threw the card in, not really thinking I'd get a response. Because one, I grew up going to church. I never filled out a visitor card, but I'd seen that happen 1,000 times. And so I didn't think anything would happen. But a lady contacted me from that church, set up a time for me to meet with the pastor. And when I got to the church, she opened the door, walked me in. And I basically sat down with that guy and told him my story, that like I've done with you guys. And I just said, I don't understand why I'm here. I don't understand why God allowed those things to happen. And I'm really frustrated. And he said, Matt, you need to give up control. And I said, listen, I get that. I grew up going to church. I did that when I was 5. I thought I prayed a prayer and I was baptized. I've done that already. And he said, no, listen, when you were 21 and basketball fell apart, you took control of your life, of your happiness, your peace. And then he asked a great question. He says, how's that going for you? And I said, it's not going well. I don't think I can keep going this way. And he said, you need to give up control. So that day is when I surrendered my life to Jesus. And the change was pretty incredible. I really just went in there to vent and to blow off some steam. But God had these bigger plans. That lady that answered the email, that walked me to the church, we've actually been married now for 9 years, almost 10 years. And so when I tell people, when I talk to maybe young men, I jokingly say, hey, guys, just go to church. God has your wife there waiting for you. And again, my plans as a 9-year-old were just to play college basketball and nothing else. But God had way bigger plans for my life. I just had to kind of get out of the way.
It's such a powerful story. So you had a phase where you were drinking heavily in your 20s. You get to age 30 and you think, all right, this change needs to happen. And you sort of confront some of your doubt or some of your opposition, and you just sort of present yourself and say, here's what I'm thinking, here's what I'm feeling. I love the rawness that you come with.
The cool thing was that the things that used to, when I would get frustrated, when there'd be stress in my life, I had a divorce in my 20s that brought a lot of that and some other bad, some bad choices and things that I did. And when those frustrations would come, I would just always run to things to numb it and to get away. But the cool thing was, I really feel like it was after that day, the appeal or the draw to those activities, it was gone. And life hasn't been perfect since then, but it's almost as if being able to see those issues and those problems through God's eyes, through God's lens, it's really helped me through that time. Jana being put in my life to bring accountability. I think there's a lot of people that you kind of see Christ in them. I see Christ in her. So she has just been huge. And then, it's really cool. Like in my 20s, it's not that there weren't opportunities for me to do great things. I was just kind of blind to them. And then all of a sudden I give God control of my life and he opens doors. So that I was coaching at a high school in Dallas-Fort Worth as a varsity assistant, had decided not to go for any head coaching jobs at that point of the year. And then a buddy of mine called and said, hey, have you heard of Grapevine Faith? It's a private Christian school. And I was a public school player and coach, so hadn't really looked into that world at all. And I said, no. He said, you need to check it out. And as soon as I went online and I saw the values of the school, oh, it just like punched me in the gut. I called about the opening position, got it, and I've been here 9 years since, where at Grapevine Faith, I'm forced to keep the main thing with these young men. I'm mandated to keep Christ the main thing and keep basketball over where it's supposed to be, which is it's a game and it's fun and we can be excellent at it, but it can't be who we are all about.
So good. Matt, how did your relationship with God help you become the person that you really are today?
He's allowed me. It's a great question. He's allowed me to. The stress that basketball brought, in coaching sometimes, it's the same thing that I was dealing with as a player. I think we all deal with in our professional lives is that feeling of we're not enough or I have to get to a certain level. For me, it's wins or playoff runs or state championships. Like the moment that those things start to take over in my life, I feel the Holy Spirit leading me back saying, listen, that's you're going off the path. That's not what's important. Come back. And it's kind of, when I'm not in the Word daily, it's amazing how that old man in my life, those old feelings start to creep back in of you have to achieve. You have to be better. You have to push. All that matters is winning and not anything else. And then, but thankfully, because of where I am and because of what God's done in my life, I just see these young men and I see myself in them. And I do my very best every day to remind them. While I'm reminding other people, I'm reminding myself of where my foundation is, who my foundation lies in. And I just think being at Faith is the best place for that for me.
Yeah. So if you're grounded yourself, that's the best way you're going to be able to share it with others.
I think I'm the best version of the coach I could be because of my relationship with Christ. The coach I was before was transactional, not transformational.
Mm-hmm.
Where what can I get from you? Nothing. Okay, what can I get from you? Nothing. Guys, this isn't enough. We have to push. And all it was I was creating mini versions of myself and pushing players away. Where now, hopefully, I try my best to teach them a fun style of basketball that I think glorifies God in the way that we give our best every day. But I want them to be great fathers, great husbands, great employees, and ultimately great followers of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Matt Samon is our guest. His book is called The Leftovers, Baylor Betrayal and Beyond. Take a little break and be right back. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Matt Samon is our guest tonight. His book is called The Leftovers, Baylor Betrayal and Beyond. And Matt broke the Baylor career record for games played at 118. Is that record still stay, Matt?
It is not.
Okay.
It was broken probably 4 or 5 years after, because the amazing thing, the job that Coach June and staff did is we went 8-21. But we were very successful in that 8-21, just keeping the program going. And then they had a couple hard years. But 5 years after, they were back in the NCAA tournament. And once those, which it, you know, it was really cool in this a year ago when they won it. And Jim Nance said it, they complete the greatest rebuild in college sports history. That was pretty cool to hear, but the 5 years after, they're back in the tournament. And so some of those players started playing longer seasons, playing more games. Okay. And so they beat it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always like to kind of have you look back a little bit just temporarily, and if you could go back in time, would you have changed anything? Would you have even decided to go to a different school, or do you think this experience you had was necessary to learn what you learned about life?
Yeah, I think the answer to that, because I talked to some coaches quite a bit on a little coaching podcast that I started, and I asked that question to a lot of them of what would you do differently if you could start over? And I think the answer I give you is I wouldn't change anything. Even as hard as that time was, and looking back, I did make two phone calls when I thought that – when my dad told me he thought that the program was going to be shut down after all the revelations of what Coach Bliss had done and what had happened. And, you know, when all that stuff happened, he thought, man, they're going to shut this program down, Matt. You got to do something. And so I called Ball State because they had been recruiting me in high school. And then one of my teammates had transferred to Davidson and played for Coach McCullough there. And I called him. And I had seen a lot of one-year guys come through Baylor, and they rarely had successful senior years because 1 year just isn't a long time to get acclimated to the system, to the school, and you're sitting out a year, you learn some bad habits. And so I kind of knew that, and I wasn't – I mean, I had averaged 4.5 points a game my junior year. I was a starter and kind of a glue guy. I played really good defense, and I would be the first one on the floor and take charges, but it's hard to market that. And so when I called him, I already knew probably what the answer would be. And he was very kind, but said, yeah, we typically don't take 1 year guys. He didn't say because my stats were so bad to my face, but I could imagine, you know, I'm 6'2" with 4.5 points a game, but you know, so I just knew that, but I wouldn't change anything because one, it's just so hard in the moment to see how, especially when you're struggling, how God's hand can still be with you and be guiding you, even when things are going bad. But now looking back, it's like I can see the why behind it, and I can see his hand guiding me through, you know, sometimes allowing me to just completely be engulfed in my own self-pity. And then other times, I mean, maybe even saving me or pulling me out from doing some things that really could have altered my life in a big way. But I can see all that. And then also just leading me to that church, leading me to Jana, leading me. Like, I couldn't change any of that because of what he's done in my life.
Was it hard for you to quit drinking and partying?
No, and I can only really give that up to Christ's work in my life. Now, here's one thing. I it was more of an emotional piece for me where it was never a physical dependence, but I did lose friends when I made those choices. Like, they really didn't want to hang out with me anymore when I wasn't doing the same things that they were doing. My desire to really hang out with them. I got plugged into a local church, that same church. I got plugged in really quick. And then spending time with Jana too. I mean, that was never a part of her life. So it's hard to say it just because it did dominate my life for so many years, but it wasn't difficult.
Matt, we have so many people, you know, that listen to this show who have a family member who's dealing with addiction right now, or they're currently struggling with it at this point. And if you could go back again to where you're at in your late 20s, getting to near 30, I know you touched on it some, but for maybe that person listening tonight who's just barely hanging on and they're questioning, how do I at least get to that place where you get raw, you get real with God, like you said, what advice would you give that person or to a family member who's just trying to be as loving as they can, but eventually, I mean, it's hard to hang on and to continue to have hope in that spot?
You know, I was blaming things that happened to me as a 21-year-old that were outside of my control. Like, I did nothing to cause that whole situation there. But the consequences of others' decisions really affected me in a big way. And I was stuck in that wheel of blaming things that even had happened almost 9 years ago at that point. And instead of taking any responsibility for myself of, and that's what that pastor said. He's like, he said, you took control. Cause I was telling him, like, I mean, I just feel out of control. Like I told him, I was like, I feel out of control. Like I'm doing the things that I don't want to do, you know, and not doing the things that I want to do. Right. And he said, it's because you're making those choices. And I would just say one is, leaning in to God and his promises and the word, reading the Bible, opening it up and pouring through it, and being consistent with that. I was an angry person. I was listening to angry music at the time. Like that music and those lyrics, they were powerful and they were taking me. I was watching things that were feeding just this sin in my life. So there is a point where, like, we got to give control up to God and acknowledge the part that we have played in our lives getting to the point where they are right there. It just took me a long time. I played the blame card for years and years. I do think that, one, God's grace is enough. And the feeling I got when I surrendered to him that day was kind of a feeling of a father with open arms there to take me in, not somebody judging me or condemning me for what I had done. Because I think even though I'd grown up in church, this idea of I've sinned too far, I've gone too far, I can't come back, he won't welcome me back, like that crossed my mind all the time, to the point where I just said, if that's the case, I'm just going to keep running the other way. And I think people need to know that's just the farthest thing. That is a lie that if you're not careful, it's easy to believe that you can do too much, go too far, and he won't take you back.
Can you unpack for me a little bit how you lean into God and his promises?
Well, to me, it's staying in the word. I want to be in the Bible every day. And I went years without reading the Bible at all, without listening to sermons, without researching, you know, people that teach, you know, good doctrine in an effective way, you know, listening to music that would build me up. To me, and personally, I feel like that's all leaning in. Like, whatever you're spending your time thinking about, if it's not growing your relationship closer to God, then to me, that's not leaning in. It's the opposite. You're feeding yourself things that are going to open up doors for sin to creep in. And you know, I guess it's a little bit of maybe training as a player. You know, if I'm training to become a good player, I need to have a good diet. You know, I need to be spending time on my game. I need to be watching things that'll up my IQ. I think that's the same way with our walk as well. And with that, the Holy Spirit is able to work. And in those moments where maybe I'm tempted, I just feel and hear those promises, or I maybe even shielded from them in some way.
Matt, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Just lots and lots of wisdom you've given us, and thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. I hope it did help. I'm just a basketball coach that is trying to figure it out, but thankful for God's grace for sure.
Thank you so much. That wraps up our show. Thank you for being with us tonight. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. And so I have to say before I go. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.